Empire.
You thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the urban sports scene.
You are listening to the urban sports scene with Will T, Ray Jeezy, and myself, Wole. And we are part of Empire Media and EmpireMedia.com. What's good, fellas?
I mean, I was going to let Ray go first.
I thought I lost John.
Will T always speaks up first, and then today he wants to get quiet. But I'll speak for the fellas. It's a great day. The sun came out later. It feels amazing. I'm ready for the summertime. Fellas, urban sports scene, draft talk, HTTC. I don't know if I like that hashtag right now. I was feeling take command better than this.
Did you really? No, I was not feeling that. I'm sorry. I won't even lie to you. That thing was trash. But what's going on?
I'm doing fine. I'm doing fine, man. It's a nice day outside.
Tuesday. Stealing my answers, man.
Boy, you take stealing your answers. What's happening?
He stole my answers.
I just said it's a nice day outside. It's Tuesday evening, so I get to talk sports with my fellas. Everything's good with me, man.
You know, and it's exactly. It's a special time. You know, we usually start at 8 o'clock, but today, stuff is happening in life, so we had to start a little early. But it's cool though. It's different, right, fellas? It's a little different.
Yeah, it's a little different. I can't say it's bad, or I can't say that it's better. You know,
It's 4 p.m. on the West Coast. That's all I know. We'll see. What time is it in the mountains? That's
it's all that three p.m. 3 p.m. in the mountain time.
Hey, like I mentioned, we're on Empire Media. Empire Media hosts multiple DMV sports podcast shows, such as the John Kime Report, hosted by ESPN Washington Commanders insider John Kime, and Jones Football, hosted by USA Today insider Mike Jones. And you can subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, and Google Podcasts. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. Make sure you subscribe to the Urban Sports Scene YouTube channel as well.
I got to correct myself. It's actually 5 p.m. Mountain Time.
What's happening? What's happening?
All right, the show can be found on Podcast DC, the local app with hundreds of options in local news and health in the DMV region. Download the Podcast DC app to hear all of our Empire shows as well as other great content.
And don't forget to tweet us at Urban Sports Scene and hit us up on IG at Urban Sports Scene and like our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. Also, join our Urban Sports Scene Facebook group. Just search Urban Sports Scene, sports bloggers, sports podcasters, and, of course, sports debates.
Will T.
Let's get into our tradition, the pregame.
Here's what we have on tap. We'll break down the results of the Washington Commanders draft at 7:25. We'll talk about the NBA playoffs. At 7:40, we'll talk boxing. Shakur Stevenson defeated Oscar Valdez. And what's next for Tyson Fury after he beat down Dylan White? Finally, in our segment HBCU Corner, we have a pre-taped interview with former Miles College running back Kingston Davis. But first, we talked about the Washington Commanders. What were your thoughts on Washington's draft, them taking Jahan Dotson with the 11th pick? We'll start with Ray.
In my opinion, this screams Darius Hayward Bay 2.0. Ooh. And many call the Washington franchise the Raiders of the East. No disrespect to Darius Hayward Bay. Of course, I love the Terps. Mm-hmm. Maryland, that's where I'm from. That's where I reside. And I'm not at all trying to take a shot at him. But what I'm saying is, Jahan Dotson himself said, I thought I was a late Thursday or even early Friday pick. We all know Darius Hayward Bay was also projected as a later round pick. Now, Jahan Dotson is saying this himself, but the Commanders took him in the first round and mid-first round when they probably could have got him later on. I just didn't understand where they were coming from. I was with Wole and many others on social media and in the fan base that said, take the best player available with the pick that you have because you're not good enough to move back and act as though you can let other good players come off the board and then take a guy that you quote-unquote really want. I know Martin Mayhew is not happy with the criticism, but I honestly feel as though this was not a good pick in the spot. Jahan Dotson is obviously a speedy receiver. I will say this on the flip side, though. I'm glad that they selected him and didn't pass saying he was too small, because they did the same thing years ago with DeSean Jackson. Uh-huh. Different regime, but still the biggest mistake they made years ago was passing on him saying, we already got Santana Moss. No, take a speedy, fast, smaller receiver, because, guys, as we saw with teams such as the St. Louis Rams with Kurt Warner, teams like this can excel when you got that speed, when you can hit guys across the middle. You got De'Ami Brown, uh-huh. Curtis Samuel. It could be great. Terry, of course. But I just felt like the place in this draft, or the time that they took him, the selection that where they picked him, it's not the right place.
Will?
I mean, Ray, you said you're not trying to take a shot at him when you called him Darius Haywood Bey, but, I mean, subliminally you are taking a shot at him, because we know how Darius Haywood Bey kind of turned out in the NFL, but that's another subject.
Haywood Bey, he went early, and Jahan Dotson said, I went too early. That's all. Sorry. I like Darius Haywood
No problem. But, look, I think one thing you get, no matter what, there's some people who want to say this isn't a good pick. Some people want to say he was drafted too early. But what you do get with this young man is he has a track record of being productive,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
At Penn State. So I think that's one of the things that probably went into the Commanders' evaluation of him. They probably thought, okay, let's get a guy who's done it on a major D1 level against top quality competition year in, year out. And he was a senior. So, he saw the Ohio States, the Michigans, the Iowas, the Michigan States. So he played in those situations against top tier Division I talent. So I'm not gonna sit here and say that I'm very familiar. I have some familiarity with him,
uh-huh.
Because I had a relative who attended Penn State.
Okay.
So I have some familiarity with him. I know that this is a young man that produced when he stepped on the field relatively early.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully he's able to take that to that work ethic and that production and bring it to the Washington Commanders, and he's able to be a viable 1A or number 2. A 1B mm-hmm. or number 2 receiver for this team.
I like that.
But like Ray and you also stated, I do think that they should have relied on, and maybe their draft board did have him at number 11.
Maybe,
right? But none of us ever know that. But if it wasn't and they reached for him, because
mm-hmm.
There was some thought that there were some guys who were a better talented,
of course,
a better talent, i.e. Safety from
Hamilton.
Kyle Hamilton, yeah, from Notre Dame.
Yeah.
You know, only time will tell.
Shout out to George. I know you're listening.
Yeah.
You hear what we're talking about. Chime in, brother. I'm looking for your comments, especially on Kyle Hamilton.
Yeah.
But also on the Darius Haywood Bey.
So I'll say this. I don't think he's Haywood Bey, because he can catch way better than Haywood Bey, even in Maryland. But I watch kid play. Like, he's good. Like, it's not, I don't want to knock him. But like you said,
no,
Ray,
no, I wasn't.
Yeah, well, no, I'm not saying you're knocking him. I know you're not. He's to me, he's talented. He is talented. He's a guy that I thought would be a first rounder. I just didn't think he'd be at the 14th. Even when you trade back to the 14th, right? They traded back to the 14th, or 15th, whatever. He's still not to me. There are players on that board that you could have took that was better. Like at 11, if you're gonna go backwards, at least, and we'll talk about it later, your later round picks, let them, if you're so obsessed with getting a third or fourth round pick, let those picks be great. You know what I mean? But that's a whole different topic. We're talking about Jahan Dotson. I think, to me, when you have a receiver out there on the board that, you know, a lot of people state that, you know, thought that he was the best wide receiver on the board, but he was hurt, you know, I mean, Jameson Williams, he's on the board, I'm taking that. Because I don't want to hear that, all right, he's not available this season like that. Then in year two, he's like one of the best receivers in football, but you just wanted to get Jahan Dotson just to play the season. And what were you going to do this season? You damn well better do something special this season if you're worried about Jahan Dotson for 1 year. You know what I mean? So that was my issue. And then we're talking about Kyle Hamilton. That kid is special. There's a reason why the Ravens win. There is a particular reason why the Ravens consistently win. I don't care what Bram said. There is a reason why the Ravens win games, bro. I'm being real. Like, dude, when they
Shots
get a player,
fired.
Yes, they Shots are fired, and they're fired. Yeah, they're going. But like when you have an opportunity to get one of the premier players in all of college football, like they this dude in all of this draft, you have people on their board that had this dude the best player in the draft. Period. The only thing I heard was a 40 time. Ed Reed ran like a 4.57 in the combine, and Ed Reed's one of the best safeties to ever play this game. And this, and they talking about Kyle Hamilton. I'm not saying he's Ed Reed, but Kyle Hamilton has instincts. All he did was ball in Notre Dame. That's all he did. All he did was ball in Notre Dame, and he played against the top tier talent. He played against USC. He's played against Michigan. He's played against Notre Dame's played against multiple good teams. They've been in Power Five. They've been in the big BCS bowls. This dude stands out. And you decided not to get him because a 40 time is bad. You can't tell me Jahan Dotson is more special than Cal Hamilton. I'm sorry, you can't. There's a reason why the Ravens took him. The Ravens don't even really need a freaking safety, and they took him. That's how good dude is. The Ravens don't even need a freaking safety.
Well, like, I think we don't know if his 40 time was the thing that kept him.
Well, from being drafted. Well, I'm gonna say this.
Washington Commanders.
Yeah, I mean, let's put it this way: like you ball out. You've done everything right on film. Your 40 time wasn't the best in the world, and you slipped down to 14. You slipped down to the Ravens. Everybody had him projected as a top five pick. As soon as he ran,
I mean, but that's what it is. It's just projection.
Man, like, Will, I'm telling you,
none of us know these things for sure because hold on, listen. Uh-huh. Allow me to make my point.
Hey, go ahead, bro.
Because the NFL draft is so much mystique around it. Like, teams try to keep their boards a secret. It's lying season when it comes to these prospects and the NFL draft and these teams. So none of us know exactly why, unless you inject a GM or a scout or someone in the front office with truth serum. We probably won't know why he wasn't selected by Washington.
Thanks, George. Appreciate you. Like, it was the 16th pick. Thank you, George. I appreciate you. Also, George, he's vibing me. You know what I'm saying? He's talking about, preach about Kyle Hamilton. He said, for me, Hamilton is the replacement for Sean Taylor we've been looking for since Taylor's tragic death.
You might be listening to the last show as part of Empire Media at the Rolate Shack as the founder. But you can catch the Urban Sports Scene on EmpireMedia.com. Again, you're listening to the Urban Sports Scene on EmpireMedia.com. So real quick, fellas, I know we have another question, but I want to read a comment from George as well. I appreciate you as always, my dude. This was after he said this all correction, of course. When Wole made that mistake, wasn't me. He said, I was livid at missing out on Olave and Hamilton. But what they did with the picks. Olave, my bad. But what they did with the picks they picked up was real good business. Robinson / Howell. All
right. So can we talk about the core everybody's hyped about Howell? Can we break this down? Other than Tom Brady, I'm serious because this is a weak quarterback draft.
That's a good way to get him.
Yeah, it's a fifth round. I know, right? It's a good spot to get him because he was supposed to be a higher pick in a weak quarterback draft. But the league wasn't impressed with these quarterbacks. So, like I'm saying, like if Washington, my thing about Washington fans, I've heard like we got our future quarterback. I'm like, bruh, the only dude that you could, other than like Tom Brady, you don't typically say you're going to find your future quarterback in the fifth round. I'm sorry. It's like it's rare. So if Washington sucks this season, you think they're going to wait for Howell to be their future quarterback? I'm like, nah, they suck this season. They're going to go and draft a quarterback in the first round. So I don't know how much Howell has to ball out in the preseason for him to be even thought of as a guy that they can kind of tailor to be that guy for the future.
I mean, he doesn't even have to ball out in the preseason. He just has to look good in practice, right? In training.
I mean, like even right. that, yeah. But even if that, though, right? Let's be real. Like how the NFL works, right? So say, because next year's quarterback crop is supposed to be much better than this crop. So if Washington if they don't have a good year, right? If it goes left, you don't think they're getting a quarterback?
I didn't say that.
I'm just saying. So I'm saying when you're the fifth round pick, I'm saying when you're the fifth round pick.
Okay. I think there are a couple of contingencies. It's contingent upon where they select, who comes out.
True.
Right? If there's a new coach, so that, or, you know, what the front office situation will be. So there's a couple of things. Uh-huh. But if Washington is, I don't know, 4-13 and has a top three pick and Bryce Young comes out, or what's the kid, or Caleb Williams, who a local DC product.
He's like,
if either one of those guys come up.
He's a true freshman.
Possibly.
He's a true freshman, though, right? He's a true freshman.
Oh, no, yeah, that's right. He's a sophomore. He'll be a sophomore. Yeah, he'll be a sophomore. Yeah.
Yeah.
If Bryce Young, you know, decides to put his name in the draft and makes himself eligible, who knows? Possibly.
All right, so I'm going to read my man George. I like to give my man George his flowers. He said, I think there's a decent chance Howell is starting in 2023, but taking him in the fifth round should not deter Washington from taking a quarterback in the first round next year. If the right guy is there,
I agree with that too.
I agree with him. Definitely agree with it. All right. So, what are your overall thoughts on their draft though? On Washington's draft, I'll start with you, Will. I think I have a Ray. All right, Ray. I think I have a good idea what Ray's thinking.
Nah. No, you don't.
Okay. My bad.
No, I think it was decent. Mm-hmm. You know, I look at Brian Robertson Jr. They drafted him. I look at the guy who's their current starting running back, Antonio Gibson. I don't see a world of difference between those two guys. They're both two big physical running backs who, you know, don't have a lot of wiggle that I saw, per se. Interesting pick in the second round, though, Mathis, the D tackle from Alabama. What's so funny?
Because even dude thought he was going to be a third or fourth round pick.
That's what I'm saying.
He thought he was going to be a third or round pick, third or fourth round pick.
There you go.
He literally said that though, right? This dude literally said he's gonna be a third or fourth round pick, and then they draft him in the second round. Like that's hilarious. That is so.
I mean, it's look, you know, look what the Patriots do. They routinely draft guys who people think are going to be third or fourth round picks. Now, not to say that. This front office is comparable to New England or even has had New England's results. But, you know, sometimes it happens and sometimes it works out.
I feel you, but this, you know what? You know, if you're right. If they had a Belichick resume, I'd be with you, dude. But they got Jamin Davis in the first round in 19. They lose cool points already, bro. Something about track record. All you can do, if somebody is throwing out like stars out there, like drafting stars and doing good work, then yeah, I would you, Will T. Like, you go off the track record, you'd be like, I ain't doubting him. He's shown me. It's on the resume. But if you were out here drafting your first draft and you did what you did last year and you're still doing reaches, and not to say these dudes aren't talented. I'm not even saying that because I think Jamin Davis is talented. And I think Jahan Dotson is talented. Old boy from Mathis from Alabama had 9 sacks, so he's got talent. But you could get him. You can still get these individuals later on. Like, you could still stack your team with more talent and still get this dude if you wanted him that bad. Get him in the third round. He would have been there. He wasn't that Alabama guy. He was solid, but he wasn't that Alabama guy.
True. But what does that mean for the guy the current Alabama guy that's on there?
He ain't been in the wrong. I mean, he's a potential replacement. But like, hey, what was the couple years ago when they traded Trent? Sadiq Charles, wasn't he supposed to be a potential replacement? Still ain't he ain't Trent. This dude ain't paying talent. He's solid, but he ain't paying talent. Payne is way more talented than dude. I mean, he could be a replacement. You know, I'm not saying he can't be, but we're saying that can he be better than is he should Payne feel threatened that this dude is on his squad in terms of his talent? No, he shouldn't be threatened. Should he be threatened? Does he feel like, oh, they trying to replace me? Maybe, but he shouldn't be threatened that this dude going to outshine him. I think people. Like,
well,
go ahead, Will.
No, I was just going to say, as a fan, I'm pretty sure your hope is that, you know, these guys turn out to be positive contributors to the team.
Of course.
Sooner rather than later.
Of course. I mean, you want all these dudes, one, as young men to be productive and, you know, to fulfill their dreams in the league or whatnot. That's a fact. You know, nobody out here hating on folks and want them to fail. Like, I'm not doing that. But when we look at, because our job is to assess folks, right? I mean, we're talking about, from our opinion, not to say we're pros or anything, but, or a situation or how you do something. Like, if you have value, like, if you have that guy, and like, my whole issue with their draft was, and we said this, I said this before, like, draft the best player available. Like, that's the route you got it. You should go when you're this team. Like, you should draft the best player available. You're not good enough to let certain people go, you know, go to the wayside. Because now what's going to happen is, in a year or two, these fans who are, like, saying, who are trying to make excuses for this draft are going to say, man, we could have got him. We could have got him. Mm-hmm. You know, that's, now they saying, now they saying, it's about need. It's about need. But eventually, when it, a couple years down the road, they ain't going to be saying it's about need.
That's true, but one thing you can't knock the organization doing in the first three rounds is they drafted guys who were productive, right, in big Division I programs.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that translates over to the pros. I don't know if there's any correlation at all. But, you know, if the if these guys don't pan out, you can't say that you reached for guys who were not productive.
Yeah. No, I agree.
The highest level of college football.
Yeah, my issue wasn't about these guys are productive. I agree with you, Will T. I mean, that's one of my when you draft them players, I like for players to be productive on Saturdays. I like that. That's a thing that I do like. I'm not into combine stuff. But the players they passed up were very productive, and they were very, very productive. They were elite productive. The players they passed up on, like, that's my issue. Like, if you're gonna, yeah, I'm with you. You got somebody who's productive. But you passed on dudes that were high on the highest level of productivity. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the issue. Like, you passed up on those dudes, and that's a whole different art. That's a whole different beast. But I mean, that's all I'm saying. You passed up on those dudes. That, like, all these squads. Like, we can use on terms of who passed up on Randy Moss. I'm not saying these dudes are Randy Moss, but look how many squads passed up on Randy Moss. But Minnesota got there. It's like, dude, you know, you're the best player for real. We don't even really need you, bro. We had Jake Reed and Chris Carter. We don't even really need you. But you're the best player. We're gonna take you. I complained about, like, Atlanta not getting CeeDee Lamb, but the Cowboys was like, screw that. We getting CeeDee Lamb. They didn't need CeeDee Lamb. They damn near didn't even need what's his name, right? The linebacker.
Oh, Michael Parsons.
They ain't need Michael Parsons for real. They need a Patrick Surtain son, or they need a cornerback. They need a cornerback safety more. They ain't got Micah. I'm just saying, like,
every team has a different philosophy.
Yeah.
Every team evaluates different players differently.
That's the point. That's the problem.
But this is what.
Okay, but let me make my point.
Go ahead.
It seems as if I'm not an apologist. This organization or this regime, but
the pattern seems that they want to draft guys who were productive in college on in major D1 programs.
Uh-huh. Huh?
It seems like it.
I do want to chime in. I want to clarify my earlier statement. I was not comparing the skill set. I just want to put that out there. Just because I can see that's going to go left at some point. But what's interesting is how I look at drafts is, especially if a team or a franchise is struggling, you want a draft to energize your fan base.
Yes.
And this did exactly the opposite because of what Wole has already said. And then you draft the Percy Butler, who, like I told you, Wole, I text you. I said, I looked at his YouTube pic. I'm like, dang, he looks good. But he's being called Troy Apke. Now, you talk about this. He's being called a special teamer. And that he's Troy Apke 2.0. Now, that's just messed up. But if you ask me from the reaction I saw and from the guys that we interact with who also are content creators, they're like, what the heck is going on? There's a few homers out there that Washington can do no wrong. They love the new name. They love the new jerseys. They love everything.
Yeah.
But the real folks who actually know football are like, wait a minute, why are we getting the best guys? And why are we drafting guys earlier? I do like the Sam Howell pick because when we talked about this draft months ago, we said Sam Howell could be selected by any team around the second or third round. You got him in the fifth, so I think that's value. And he could potentially be the future. I love the way he competes. I think the ACC was stronger than people give him credit for, so I like that pick. But overall, if I had to give a grade, I would say a C-, just based on all that we've talked about. And again, the goal to energize your fan base, you failed. This is your chance to turn a page. After all the negative press, after the inquiries by Congress, they needed to do well in this draft. And I think, Wole, you talked about it for weeks. You said they got to do. I forgot the exact story. They need to hit a home run with the draft. Maybe you said something to that to that effect. But I feel as that they failed miserably. Like I said, Martin Mayhew, he got a little saucy. That's what's up, though. Show some nuts, and let me see what you do when the fans get in the field. But I'm talking about preseason game number two, or whatever the series game is now, with only being three preseason games. Not in pads. I don't want to hear the training camp story.
Yep. I want to hear that crap.
I'm sick of it. I hopefully we'll be there.
Yeah, I don't want to hear that. I'm sick of that crap, for real. Hey, real quick on Twitter before we go to break, the homie Cameron tweeted, I like who we drafted, but I'm surprised we didn't draft a linebacker. He said, I'm surprised.
Exactly.
Yeah, surprised that too. Christian dash UK HTTC said, immediate contributors and surprised by how as late as fifth round, why did he drop so far? Like I said, I said on Twitter, and I'll say it here, he dropped far because it's a weak quarterback class. No one really was enamored with this quarterback class. So we all hyped this quarterback class more than, you know, these NFL teams did. So that's why I kind of worked that way with them. But he's got ability. Like Ray said, I agree. He does have ability. So we'll see how it pans out. But, I mean, in terms of my grade, I'm with you, Ray, about a C-D. That's where I'm at. And I like the running back. I think my favorite player in the draft form is the running back, because I think that's a real value. I think that he can compete and take Gibson's job as a starting running back, because he's a real running back. Gibson had to play wide receiver for a while, and he has ball security issues and whatnot, so he's still trying to learn. This dude is an actual running back. Like, Robinson's an actual running back, so it's going to be some competition. And a competition could be good for Gibson. Because if he drops that ball, I think Ron Rivera will be real quick to put him on a bench and have his new guys as the start running back.
I mean, only time will tell, man. Like I always say, 3 years, and then if the draft class hype before you can evaluate the draft class.
That's facts.
All of this, making it's just conjecture at this point.
You got it. All right, Will, you can take us a break now.
it's my time? Oh, damn. All right, we'll talk the NBA playoffs after the break. It's time for Sports C.
For ages.
At Pirate.
5 p.m. Mountain Time. We're not used to it.
We're used to this, man. We're used to it. You dig, deuces.
At PirateMedia.com.
Listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Wole, Ray Jeezy, and Will T. And we are part of Amp Pyre Media at amppyremedia.com.
Did you just refer to yourself in the third person?
I'm like The Rock, bro. You know what we do out here.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Like The Rock out here, bro.
I think you're just following the line.
I know exactly, dude. I ain't that type of person.
It's all good. I have that flag, my friend. So, fellas, the Celtics and Bucks are currently playing. Celtics lead by double digits. Jaylen Brown having a game to start. He's only missing one shot, 3 of 3 from three. Eastern Western Conference semifinal round is officially underway. We know that we are impartial on this show. At least I am, because I got Monty Williams.
Yeah, exactly. I am too, bro.
He's the head coach of the Phoenix Suns, and he's from what county, Will T? Anyway, who do you have advancing to the conference finals, Will T?
I have Miami and Milwaukee in the East. Mm-hmm. And in the West, I have Phoenix and Golden State.
Oh, Hello. I mean, I hear you. You there? That's me. My bad. I'm looking at it. Because I got other tweets and stuff, and folks are responding to that, or to this question. For me, I got Boston, and then I got Miami. I'm rooting for the Sixers. Cause I'm rooting for James Harden. But I got Boston, Miami, and in the West, I got Monty. I definitely got Monty, and I have. Who's playing that? I got Memphis. I think Memphis is gonna shot Golden State.
All right. Well, I'm not gonna take a bunch of time because I'm right on board with Will T. Mm-hmm. I love Boston, but Marcus Smart being injured, Jaylen Brown, he's playing well to start this game, but he's also hampered, I believe, just from a health perspective. I see Milwaukee getting it done, and that Milwaukee home crowd is nothing like these Boston role players have seen, like Pritchard and Robert Williams. These guys, I don't see them going into Milwaukee and playing a significant role. So you got the experience factor as well. I'm rocking with Will T. Milwaukee, MIA, only because Embiid is hurt, unfortunately, and Doc Rivers' track record against the great Monty Williams.
They're great, Monty Williams.
Versus the Golden State Warriors. The great
Monty Williams.
Listen, Monty blew up after our show. I don't care. After he appeared on the Urban Sports scene, he blew up, which is exactly why he ain't been responding lately. We knew it was coming. We saw what the bubble did for those Phoenix Suns, and we see that they have evolving stars on that squad. They play so well as a team. That's my favorite for the finals. It was last season. CP3 finally gets that ring. You only have to ask me next week.
So, real quick, why do you think y'all have Golden State beating Memphis, right?
Yes, I do.
All right, so tell me why. I'm just interested. Plus, I need to stall time. Plus, I need to stall time to look for this tweet. That's why. But go ahead, though.
No, for a couple reasons. We saw during the Minnesota versus Memphis series that the Memphis is a team that didn't, for some reason, hasn't been playing consistent during these playoffs. Yeah. I don't know what the reason is. That's I don't true. Know if it's because of the way that the referees have been calling the game. If you see the ebb and flow of their games, they're a lot, you know, they're going long periods without getting easy buckets. That's one of the things that made this team successful this year. Getting out in transition and getting stops. And also funneling all of those penetrations or drives towards Jaren Jackson Jr. And that was a guy who alters a lot of shots at the rim. And also they have very good defenders closing out on a three-point shots. And also those rotations when they're closing out. I think Golden State is a team that makes that extra pass, and that's going to be that. That's one of the areas that's going to give Memphis a lot of difficulty closing out on those open 3-point shots when Golden State is rotating the ball. And then also, I'm curious, you know, when Golden State goes with their quote unquote death lineup,
yeah.
How will Memphis be able to counteract that? Right,
yeah.
So those are the reasons. Those are the reasons for me. And then also, I believe that Golden State, they'll get better bench play than Memphis will. So those are the three reasons why I think Golden State's going to win.
I'll say this.
Go ahead, man.
Jordan Poole is your leading scorer. You haven't seen the best of Steph yet.
I know, right?
That's scary when you haven't even seen Steph's best game yet. And this includes last series. Uh-huh. So he's due for a big performance. I think experience factor, as well as Golden State missing out for the past several seasons. Uh-huh. I think they're motivated. I love the up-and-coming Grizzlies. They remind me of OKC when they were young and up-and-coming.
Yeah, right.
And their time is close. Now, I'm not counting them out in no shape or form. I'm sorry. I believe this can go seven, to be real. I feel like Memphis is that good. But I think that just like in game one, when it comes down to those last minutes, you have that experience with Golden State where they know how to win. And Memphis just isn't there yet. But Memphis might have the most exciting player in Ja.
Damn right they do. Ja's a beast. I got –
Jordan Poole has been – shout out to Michigan.
Yeah, shout out, man, for real. Killing. He had like 31, right, in game one. 31.
Yes.
Yeah, he'd kill him, man. Like, so. I mean, I'm happy for him because he was Milwaukee before, right? Was Milwaukee before he came here? Came to Golden State?
No.
What's
no,
he was?
Jordan Poole? No, he was drafted by Golden State.
Was he? Oh, okay, I thought he was in a trade. Yep. Okay.
He was in a G League.
That's why. That's why. Okay. Well, I'm happy for him because he'd kill him, man. I liked him
in
Michigan.
He's from Milwaukee, I believe.
Oh, okay. I mean, he was good in Michigan, so I'm glad he's kind of gotten the opportunity. It was good. I mean, for him, the blessing was, I know it sounds jacked up, but the blessing was that year that all, you know, they all were hurt. He got more time and got an opportunity to kind of work on his game as a starter. It's always dope when a young player gets an opportunity, a lot of burn. If Steph and Clay and folks were all healthy, he wouldn't have got that opportunity to be the guy that he is right now. So it kind of teaches
you.
It teaches him to be the
guy. You bring up a great point, Wale. One of the things that I think people haven't really taken into account for this Golden State Warriors team is when, you know, they had the injuries to Steph, they had the injuries to Clay, they had the injuries to Draymond, and there were a lot of young guys during those, you know, those two or three seasons when they were losing, uh-huh. that had the opportunity to play a lot of minutes and also get their confidence up within that system. And then, you know, having those three guys, those three veterans come back in, and their personality is such that, hey, only thing we want to do is win and win championships. So they don't feel threatened by these young guys, right? They's like, hey, young guys, go get it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But when it comes towards the end of the game and, you know, as we get laid off in this playoff run, you know, you guys can help. You guys can take us there, but we're going to close it out. And I think that's one of the things people aren't really taken into account for Golden State.
So on IG, about the questions, who do you think is going to go to the advance to the conference finals? The homie Joe Cardozo, 301, said the Heat versus the Bucks and Suns versus Warriors. I think the Suns versus Warriors would be a dope series. Chris Paul versus Steph, they already got history. There's so much, man. So much.
Yeah, that's gonna be another one that probably goes 6 or 7.
Yeah, I mean it's the NBA playoffs have been pretty. They've been okay. I feel like, all right, what is your grade so far in the NBA playoffs? Because I ain't gonna lie, I haven't really watched a lot. I watched certain matches, but not all.
Terrible.
Terrible.
Did you watch the draft? No. I said that's terrible for you.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Oh, there's been some great games. Like the Minnesota Memphis series.
Oh, that series. I know. That series was dope, bro. That series was dope. That series was the one I made sure I tried to watch. Because that was a bunch of, like, heated stuff. I like that. That's like retro basketball. I like that. The other ones I wasn't really a big fan of, though. I ain't going to lie.
To answer your question, I'll give this one a B+.
You said a B+?
Yep, B+.
Okay. That's cool. Okay, now I got one more question before we go to break, too. One more. All right, so everybody gets on my man James Harden, and deservedly so. You know, it is what it is. They get on my man Ben Simmons, too, and deservedly so. But this whole – all right, so when do we start talking about Embiid not being available when this team needs them? What I mean by that, because of injury. Because this seems like it happens every year.
It's not his fault this year. That was on the coach.
Okay.
That was coaching. He shouldn't have been on the floor at that point to have that first occur.
I don't necessarily agree with that because if you follow Toronto throughout the season, I know he was injured with like, what, 5 minutes left in the game and they were up. I forgot the amount that – I know they were up double digits, a relatively large lead. But Toronto is one of those teams that doesn't give up. And, you know, they have a coach in Nick Nurse and they have a culture within their organization, you know, never give up. And they, that's easily a team that could have came back and made that game really interesting. So I understand why Doc kept him in. But, you know, all in all, it's just a freak accident. Those things happen.
Yeah. Both teams play hard, man. It's okay. Embiid, you know what I'm saying? Now Embiid may not, you know, he may be the MVP without a championship. Sucks, man. Sucks. He flops a lot too. Anyway, he kind of annoys me for an African.
I mean, I don't think he's gonna win. I don't think he's gonna win the MVP. He deserves the MVP, but I don't think he's gonna win it.
Who's gonna win MVP?
Jokic's gonna win MVP.
Nah, it's gonna be Embiid. He winning that. I think they're not giving him back to back. I like Joker. I like the Joker, but they ain't giving it back to back. All right.
Since the media has such a large say in it, and we know how people in the media tend to sway towards advanced analytics, he'll probably win.
It's all you are, man. It's all you want, but it's all good. So anyway, it's time for boxing talk. Question, what's next for Shakur Stevenson and Tyson Fury? We'll discuss this after the break. You listen to the Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
Yeah, dig.
Deuces on Empire Media. It's empiremedia.com.
Come on, man. And with the local DBC news, Eddie Cool J with a triumphant comeback.
Or a solo. But tonight,
don't call it a comeback. I've been here for years. I'm rocking my pants. Put suckers in fear. Making the tears rain down like a monsoon. Listen to the bass go boom. Explosion.
Are listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Will T, Ray Jeezy, and myself, Wole, and we are part of Empire Media at empiremedia.com. All right, Saturday, WBO Junior Lightweight Champion Shakur Stevenson took the WBC Championship away from Oscar Valdez. What were your thoughts on the fight, and what's next for Shakur Stevenson, Ray Jeezy?
Well, shout out, as always. I'm showing our age, fellas. I've done this before, but I got to give a shout out to the late, great HBO Boxing. Shout out to Larry Merchant, Jim Lampley, the late, great Emmanuel Stewart, Harold Letterman, those guys, because, excuse me, I'm getting choked up a little bit thinking about it. not really, but
I know you're not.
Something's wrong in my throat. But anyway, of course, we love 24/7 on HBO. And, sorry.
You good?
Guilty, go ahead. I gotta get my third break.
Will T take it like this?
No, it's all good. It's all good. I'll step back.
That's what a team. That's what a team does, bro. That's what I'm talking about.
It was one of those nights that boxing needed, right? Because you think about it. We have this weekend is Cinco de Mayo weekend, so that's kind of boxing weekend, and we know that Canelo's going to fight this weekend, right? Uh-huh. Then you had Shakur Stevenson on ESPN with a fight that was readily available for the public to watch, where they didn't have to pay per view fees to watch it. And then also on that top of that, you had a really good card, right? You had Nico Walsh Ali with a devastating knockout. You had Keyshawn Davis with a dominant performance as the co-headline. And then you had Shakur Stevenson versus Oscar Valdez, a fight that a lot of people predicted would be highly competitive. But Shakur Stevenson, this is one of those performances where a guy came in, you know, he was the challenger, and he put on a dominant performance, such a dominant performance, and he's so young that this is a performance that will likely, and all, you know, take him to the next level as being one of those fighters who people tune in to watch readily, right? So this was a dominant performance by him. Oscar Valdez was just outclassed. It just wasn't his night against Shakur Stevenson. Shakur Stevenson is one of those guys we saw a culmination of a superstar to make it. What I like to attribute it to is when Floyd Mayweather fought Arturo Gatti. Right? That was one of those fights that people thought that it would be competitive, right? Yeah. But the world saw the coming out party of a dominant dominant young fighter on a major platform that a lot of people were able to see. So happy for Shakur Stevenson. I don't necessarily know what's next for him because, you know, he's in that top rank. top rank. I'm just being honest. Top rank PBC, these guys typically don't like to do business with each other. They like to keep the money all in house. But I don't know what's next for Shakur Stevenson, but I know that the world will be watching it, especially if they put it on ESPN again and there's
a good lead-in to that card from a program perspective.
All right. Sorry for the interruption earlier, fellas. I'm back. And I was giving a shout-out to HBO because, again, 24/7 was such a dope show. Now you got Showtime has All Access, and ESPN has what's called Blood, Sweat, and Tears. All are very similar, but nothing's like the original. However, what struck me as interesting was when Oscar Valdez appeared on Blood, Sweat, and Tears, and he was watching film with Shakur Stevenson, he knew he wasn't the better boxer based on what he was saying. He said, but if he lets his guard down, I catch him, it's a wrap. Will T made the perfect analogy. I was going to say this, and I'm glad that you already mentioned it in that comparison to Arturo Gatti and Mayweather, because that's what a lot of us thought back then. Is if Arturo Gatti catches him, yeah, he could probably hurt Mayweather, but he couldn't catch him. Uh-huh. And in this case, Valdez just simply could not catch Shakur Stevenson. Oscar Valdez, I'm glad he took the fight. I'm glad that it was, like Will T said too, was readily available. And I think what's next for Shakur Stevenson is, because of the politics in boxing, he's probably going to take whoever the next mandatory is, and or if Loma is willing to meet him at a catchweight, or if Shakur is willing to move up per se, I think the Loma-Shakur fight could happen. That's a top-ranked fight. That's something that the fans have been asking for. They want Loma in a big fight. Uh-huh. Loma, of course, is going to go for Kambosos, but because of what's going on in his country,
yeah,
he opted, of course, not to. So that could be a potential fight, but Jay Prince is probably not going to pull the trigger on a young Shakur Stevenson fighting somebody as dangerous as Loma at this stage of his career. Although Shakur is skilled enough to where I think he's ready for anybody.
Yeah,
I would love to see him fight Tank and many others. Haney was mentioned in the post-fight interview. And him and Haney have similar styles, both excellent boxers. So that would be a dope matchup. Both of them agreeable. Haney's a promotional free agent. That could work as well, depending on the weight.
You know what? It's you know, Shakur Stevenson is a beast. You know, Ray and Will, you know, I've said that. I think he's the truth. But the power is starting to concern me. Like, I feel like, you think his power matches up? His skill is there. Like, his skill is elite. Like, I think his skill is elite. But the power, like, not to be able to finish a dude. Do you think that would be a problem for him down the road? Because I
don't think it would be a problem for him down the road. I think he's so young and he's still growing into his body, right? This isn't a guy who's even 25 yet, right? And that's typically the time when we start to see boxers, well, you know, guys who aren't naturally, I'm not going to say naturally, but guys who aren't big punchers, that's when they start to accumulate the knockouts when they get towards that point in their career.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be too concerned about it. Because I'm not concerned about it at all at this point.
Yeah, because I think
he's going to continue to grow into his body.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. He'll get stronger, but it's either some folks just have the power and they don't, right? Like, you could do whatever to try to, you could try to get, you know, you're going to get stronger, and it's going to be, you'll have some power added to it. But in terms, I'm like, Ray mentioned Lomachenko. If Lomachenko's not scared of you in terms of, say, your power, like, there's some things that he won't be able to get away with. You know what I mean? It's just, I feel like when you go up in skill, if you don't have the power to put somebody down, certain folks aren't going to be, they'll be willing to kind of be there with you. You know what I'm saying? Because even we talk about Floyd, you talk about, like, Floyd had some power. Like, we forget how Pretty Boy had power. Like, you say what you want to. Like, he was scared, but Pretty Boy had power. I just think that to me, this dude is so skilled, though. I'm with y'all. He's so skilled, but the power, able not, because he beat the crap out of Valdez. He beat the crap out of him. Like, I thought he was going to end him. Like, he did whatever he wanted to do. Like, whatever. You know what I mean? And the only thing he could, you know, the only thing that needed to do was to finish him out. And he just didn't. And that kind of, I was like, you know what? I mean, he did get a knockdown. Though I thought that was more of a trip, for real. Like, it wasn't like a real, real knockdown to me. But he got a knockdown, which was still, it showed his skill because he, you know, Valdez was going wild and he kind of sidestepped it and caught him. So that's the only thing that would concern me about him. It's just that the power. It's power when you're going against certain competition. Not when you're fighting people like Valdez. It's when you're going up in competition. That's what would concern me about him.
Well, look. Like I said, I don't think it's too much of a concern. Okay. But if you saw throughout the fight, he was able to keep Valdez at bay,
facts,
right? Like, Valdez tried to come, you know, he tried to
work his way in, most of the time, not behind a jab or, you know, or a check hook. He just tried to come walk his way straight in.
Yeah.
And you saw that Shakur Stevens was able, you know, towards the end of the fight, it start, you know, that that practice or that mentality of that's how you would attack Shakur Stevens. It started to, you know, Valdez started to wane off of it because, you know, Shakur Stevenson was accurately hitting him with jabs. He was accurately hitting him, touching him to the body. So, like I said, it, you know, you don't have to have a killer, devastating one-punch knockout, you know, knockout power. As long as you're able to keep your opponent at bay and you're able to control the distance, you're able to touch him to the body. You know, you know, things will, you know, will play themselves out.
Yeah, somebody open the door. What's up, man? What's going on? What's happening?
Nah, nothing. All right. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene. Oh, no. Nah, my,
right.
My bad.
You, that's what you're doing. You're right. What you doing?
You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene, part of Empire Media. That's empiremedia.com. All right, a couple weeks ago, Tyson Fury retained his heavyweight title with a TKO victory over Dillon Whyte. After the fight, he said he's never coming back. Do you believe him, Ray?
No, because no. Francis Ngannou, of course, was there, and Tyson Fury talked about a crossover bout with MMA and fighting him, if the money's right. And then we're also going to be monitoring what's going to happen with Usyk Joshua, too. If Anthony Joshua wins this next fight against Usyk, I think you'll see a part three of that, and that will keep Tyson Fury at home. But I think if Usyk comes out and he dominates again like he did in that first fight with Joshua, I think that Fury will come back to fight Usyk just to settle any debate that he's not the best heavyweight of this era, because right now Usyk looks like somebody who could challenge him. I don't care if he's undersized or not. Usyk's hand speed, his ring IQ, I think that would be a perfect fight against Tyson Fury, although I don't think he can beat Tyson Fury, to be honest, but I know Wole does.
Yeah, I do. I don't care.
Like I don't know, and that's good. That is good, because Usyk is talented enough to do it, and Usyk proved everybody wrong when he beat up Joshua the first fight. So if Usyk comes out and dominates, the media is going to start talking, and I think Tyson Fury will come out to silence any type of doubters that thinks that Usyk is in his class. I feel as though the only person that could rock with Tyson Fury is somebody like Lennox Lewis. Of course, that wouldn't be possible. But Tyson Fury, of course, is the best heavyweight of this era. I'm not going to say of our lifetime, because, again, there's several guys that we can think of that possibly could make the argument. But Usyk is a scary dude, because, like I said, the ring IQ, the hand speed, he has all the intangibles. Like I said, he's just a little undersized, but that didn't matter against Joshua. I think right now Fury is just like, I don't have no competition, which that looks to be the case. Although Wilder gave a run for his money, but Dillon Whyte, come on, we already knew what was going to happen. That was just as much of a guarantee.
Bruh, exactly. I'm not going to get into the whole Dillon Whyte thing. Like that would, like that fight was even meant to be anything. Like that fight was meant to be what it was. You know what I mean? Right. Like they did their job to promote it, to make it seem like maybe he could do something to Tyson Fury, but no. Dillon Whyte is no knock on Dillon Whyte, but it is what it is. You're not in that tier of heavyweights. He was the mandatory, right? He was a mandatory, right?
Yes, he was
the mandatory. He was the mandatory opponent, so he got what he got. I think Usyk, you know, obviously he's like just like Lomachenko. Usyk is back in the Ukraine for his people. So that fight could be delayed, and then you got Josh. And then I think he'll be back in time, right? For Joshua, will he be back in time?
Yeah, he is.
Okay.
Training for that
so,
fight.
So I mean, him being ready for Joshua, I think Joshua. That's a fight that Usyk is the favorite. I even said it before. You know, I'm a Joshua supporter, Joshua dude. But I even said that Usyk is a problem. Like that's the dude that I think could beat Joshua. And he's so skilled. We talk about Shakur Stevenson being. Like, we're not worried about power with this and that. I'm not really, because he's so skilled, I'm not, the same thing applies with Usyk. He can beat you up. You know what I mean? Like, he can beat you up. He can, because a lot of heavyweights, which is different in lighter weights, like, you know, junior lightweight or welterweight. If you're, you know, you're going to see a lot of individuals with a lot of skill. But in heavyweight, you don't really see but so many people with the skill of a Usyk. Now, Tyson Fury is skilled, not to say he's not, but Usyk is extremely skilled as well. Footwork, we saw what he did with Anthony Joshua. We saw how his footwork gave Joshua fits, combinations. The dude is a talented dude. And he, and like I said before, we forget that for a while he was on the pound-for-pound list as one of the best boxers in the game. But, you know, a lot of people kind of emerged and kind of surpassed him supposedly. But he's still the same dude, same talent. So he's a guy I think that could definitely fight. I think it's a guy that would entice Fury to fight him. I'm leaning like Ray, I know you're talking about Anthony Joshua. I'm like almost kind of forgetting about Anthony Joshua because I don't think that right now he's in a mindset to fight to beat a Usyk. So it is what it is.
But I think you guys are bugging.
What? All right. Go ahead, Will.
Y'all bugging. No, look, for this reason, Alexander Usyk is at least 6 or 7 inches shorter than Tyson Fury. He's probably 70 pounds, maybe he's probably on a minimum 70 pounds lighter than Tyson Fury. Yes, Usyk, you know, his skill, his acumen in the ring would make it fun, would make it entertaining, and he may even come out ahead on points for maybe 1 or 2 rounds. But ultimately, in the end, Tyson Fury is too big. He'll put his weight on him. He'll use his jab to keep him at bay. And Usyk, and also Tyson Fury isn't one of those guys who fights down to the height of his opponent.
Yeah.
He's a guy who fights off of his back leg and uses his shoulder roll. So Alexander Usyk won't get the opportunity to connect to his chin.
All right, Will, but wouldn't you say this, though? I mean, because we're comparing it. My issue, like, this is my thing. Like, so when we talk about what Tyson Fury can do, look at the opponents that he's done it to, though. Like, they're limited, right? So it's easier to do it to those type of people. Am I correct by saying that? Like Deontay Wilder.
So here's the thing. It's fair to say that, yes. It's fair to partially say that. Yeah. Yes, that's fair.
Mm-hmm.
But what you aren't taking into consideration is Tyson Fury is extremely skilled.
I agree. I think he is too.
Especially for someone who's 6'9", his footwork is impeccable.
Mm-hmm.
For a guy that size in the ring at 6'9" and that weight, his footwork is impeccable.
It is. I agree with you, Will T. I agree. I think his footwork is amazing. I do. I'm with you.
I said it, and I'll say this.
Hand on my most
entertaining. No, definitely not.
That's what they recharge. Go ahead.
The most competitive / entertaining fight left for Tyson Fury is Anthony Joshua.
For
and
money.
The only reason I say that, no, it's not even for, is Anthony Joshua physically.
Yeah, okay.
Anthony Joshua, 6'6", and Anthony Joshua's power.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and his power, I don't believe, is as devastating as Deontay.
One shot power isn't as devastating as Deontay Wilder.
But the accumulation of those punches over 12 rounds, if a fight were to go 12 rounds with him and Tyson Fury, it would be interesting and it would be competitive.
Yeah, the only issue is that Deontay Wilder's chin is way tougher than Anthony Joshua's. I will admit, easily. George tweeted, he said, fighting Fury is like unpicking a lock. Usyk might be the only guy skilled enough to do that.
Again, I think he has the skill to do it, but physically, is he up for the job? I don't think so.
We'll see, man. Only time will tell, man. But I'm like, you know, it is what it is.
All right, fellas. Good discussion. As part of our HBCU Corner segment, we'll play our interview with former Miles College running back Kingston Davis. After the break, shout out to Kingston Davis as he's still trying to earn a spot just at an NFL training camp. Good luck to him, and I hope you guys enjoy the interview. But you hear that after the break, you listen to the Urban Sports Team.
The Aegis.
You dig.
Deuces on Empire Media. It's empiremedia.com.
Straight out of ATL. Young one, chopping that thing, baby. Swiss beats, full surface. Come on.
and me gon' ride over to the other side. It's how these motherfuckers die. First make a prank call and get the kids out the house. Ain't trying to kill no kid, but I'ma turn it like in this drought. I make a give me money, then I'm kicking her out. I spit game to your wife, then we robbing your house. Not good that day that we gripping this grain. If you got it and I want it, I ain't calling your name. Just lay it down, boy, like a ball and see. Just get your chest in your lap.
You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Will T, Ray Jeezy, and myself, Wole. And we are part of Ampire Media, and that's at ampiremedia.com. Anyway, it's time for HBCU Corner. This segment spotlights coaches and players within HBCU athletics. Here's an interview with former Miles College running back Kingston Davis. We conducted this interview before the draft.
Welcome back to HBCU Corner. Right now we have Miles College running back Kingston Davis on the show. Kingston Davis finished the 2021 season rushing for 721 yards. He had 6 touchdowns, doing a darn thing. What's up, Kingston Davis, and welcome to the Urban Sports Scene, part of HBCU Corner.
How you doing? Thank you for having me.
Pleasure having you, my man.
So, brother, like I told you before we came on, we're gonna start out having a little fun. And I know you from Bam. I already know how y'all feel about football and your state. But you've been around to several schools for different reasons, man, and we're going to have to get into it. But tell us who has the best parties. Is it the HBCUs? Is it the bigger schools? How did you get down? And talk about the homecoming, Miles, too.
I guess it really just depends on what you're looking for as far as, like,
you what know, you mean?
I feel like, you know, at Power 5 level, you know, you have frat parties and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You know, pretty big and crazy sometimes. I feel like schools, you know, you'll have, you know, they're not as big as a Power 5. So, you know, you'll have, you know, your parties there. And for the most part, I mean, when I got to my HBCUs, you know, I really didn't party that much. But, you know, it was still fun. You know, you're surrounded. Mm-hmm. Smaller community, so you know what I mean, it's pretty fine regardless, you know. But I do think that Power 5 probably has them on that as far as, you know, party wise.
It can get
I'm surprised about it. Okay.
I'm trying to think. I'm going back to my days when I used to, you know.
We
used to party at University of Maryland.
McCollins Park, I know.
And I didn't see a big difference. So, hey, maybe you being on the football team made a difference. Is that what it is?
Yeah, that's what I'm probably so. Because I'm trying to think. Collins Park, so their homecoming, nah. I think Eastern Shore's homecoming was just as.
Yeah, well, not just homecoming, just parties in general.
Man. Yeah, parties in general. That's a whole different thing, bro. We're on a whole different level right now.
I respect it. You don't have to get into particulars. I can get some visuals.
You know what? You know, you went to you had a tour in Michigan. I'm a Michigan fan. You know what I'm saying? I just want to know this. I've always wanted to go there. Just the feel. Like, how's the big house, man? Like, how is the big house?
Oh, it's crazy. I mean, you know, the biggest stadium in college football. Mm-hmm. Oh, you know, you get in there, it's just like, and we actually, you know, we used to run the steps up there and everything like that. You know, as you go up, I mean, it gets even steeper. Mm. Man, I mean, that's a crazy environment when that place is packed out. Light gets real loud.
Mm. It was always a dream of mine. Saw it on AB, saw it on Channel 7 when I was a kid.
Bucket list.
Look, bro, it was like, I wanted to be like Desmond Howard, dude. It was just like, you know, I'm aging myself. It is what it is. But that's who I wanted to be like initially when I started watching college football.
Hey, Desmond Howard, he's on TV. You know who Desmond Howard is. He's still relevant.
I know that's right. Hey, so, for you, like, who is your favorite football player?
Man, I got a lot of them. Man, I don't think I can really like single out, okay, this is like, you know, guy. I watch a lot of guys, you know, I like to watch and take things that, you know, different people do well and try to, you know, emulate it to my game in a way. But I like watching Ezekiel Elliott, you know, his patience and his burst and everything like that, his vision. I watched a lot of Le'Veon Bell as well.
Ooh, okay.
As far as like real patience, being patient like that, I try to, you know, mimic those things. I think he was really successful at that, letting the blocks, you know, set up and stuff like that instead of just hitting the hole, you know. But I love watching Derrick Henry, you know, same, you know, running style, but I mean, he's a freak of nature, you know what I mean? And he runs the football well. So I like watching him. Saquon Barkley. I mean,
he a dog. Saquon a dog, man. I just mad the injury. He a dog though, bro.
He is. But I mean, I like watching Jonathan Taylor too do his thing last year. He's special as well. So
I wanted to ask you because I mentioned briefly the culture around football in Alabama and the state is crazy. And I just wanted to hear you describe how it was growing up in Alabama and also playing high school football, just how amazing that experience was. And of course, moving on into college, just describe your overall experience.
And I mean, that's all we got, you know, football, you know, Alabama football. I mean, I played other sports, you know, in high school and stuff like that, but nothing like, you know, Friday Night Lights. You know, it's like everybody's coming to the football game. You know what I mean? It's Fridays, you know, you got high school games. Saturdays, you either going, you know, Roll Tide or War Eagle, you know, it's tradition. And then Sundays, you know, you watching NFL football, but that's all we got, you know, so. I mean, just playing in that atmosphere, you know, it's crazy. I've been to some high school games in different states and stuff like that, but nothing like how Alabama is, where you got out there for warmups, you know, things like that. That doesn't really happen often, but in Alabama, you know, that's what we do. We live, eat, sleep, and drink football.
The Varsity Blues is real. Oh, Two-A-Days, I should say. You remember that show?
Oh, it was Hoover?
Yeah. Was that a good depiction of what high school football was like, or was that a watered-down version for TV?
I never really, like...
That's with it.
I never really, like... I watched a little bit, you know, where I can find on YouTube, but I never could find the actual show. You know, I was...
Oh, hey. I'm Asian myself.
You are Asian yourself. So, Kingston, I have a question. Going back to, like, you mentioned a bunch of great running backs, but who would you say you model your game directly, like, to a point, like, in terms of running backs, who is your game like?
I would probably say it leans more towards like Le'Veon Bell with his pace, with his start. Because I find that so important in this game, be patient, you know, as a runner, that the way that he approached it, the way he approached his game and the line of scrimmage, when he get the ball, you know, he's letting everything develop. You know, he's figuring out, you know, what holes is. I feel like as a running back, you'll be able to find holes. I mean, that's just like second nature. But you can't be too fast to them. You know, allow everything to develop, let your linemen get on the backers, and you pick and choose where you want to go. He was a master at that. You know, I often find, you know, even during the season, you know, just doing those little things, being more patient, will actually get you more yards than just hitting it full speed.
I agree. So, I do agree. I think it's a real missing in terms of certain the top running backs. When the top running backs have it, like they have patience, even the ones, you know, obviously the explosive ones, but they're still patience within that, right? to break the long ones, because they're patient. They can, you know, they slow it down, and then all of a sudden, once they hit the hole, they hit the hole. Derrick Henry is just a prime example. You mentioned Derrick Henry as well. He's a prime example. Like, he'll wait for it, and once he sees it, it's a wrap. Yeah. You know, so I totally agree.
Workhorses too.
Yeah, all workhorses. True facts. So, you know, obviously, like we mentioned, you've been everywhere. But in terms of HBCUs, like, what has your experience at an HBCU meant to you or taught you?
Oh man. Well, let's go with, for one, going to HBCU and actually have a degree. I graduated with a degree in history. Mm-hmm. So,
awesome, brother. Awesome.
Going to HBCU and taking history classes and stuff like that, you learn a lot about, you know, the country and everything like that. And I'm a guy that likes to learn, you know what I mean? So that was very interesting, learning about, you know, how our country became with, you know, America and how we got here and everything like that. Just different things in our past. And it's just like the culture of HBCU as well. You know, like I said, of course, it's a smaller school, you know, HBCU that I went to and everything. Everybody knew everybody and stuff like that, you know, but you felt like family, you know what I mean? So it wasn't like a big lecture hall, you know, you go in and you got hundreds of other students here and, you know, you only get the lesson and leave. You know, you got to build relationships with people, you know, around the community and around the school and stuff like that. And for the most part, you know, HBCUs and the culture of our people, you know, it was great, you know, talking to people and building relationships of that sort.
All right, so again, you've been well traveled, you've had experiences with the bigger school, and of course, like you talked about at HBCU, what would your advice be to a high school football player as to what decision they should make, especially if they want to go and learn more about their culture and continue to pursue their athletic dreams or their, you know, professional sports dreams? Would you advise them to go to a Power Five, or would you, you know, say it's cool to go to HBCU because if you got talent, they're going to find you no matter where you go? What would your overall just thoughts and advice be for a young person trying to make that decision?
That's tough. I mean, I think for the most part, the big difference is you have to ask the child, you know, what do you care about? You know, what do you care about the most? So, like, if you go HBCU, you're going to give up some things. You go Power Five, you can give up some things. Power Five, you know, they have more resources, obviously, you know, more money, of course, and they can do more things. HBCU, you know, the budget's different. You know, you won't get all the luxuries and stuff like that you get at Power Five. But if you want to be around your people and you want to, you know, learn the culture and things of that nature, you know, if this is the route you want to go, or, you know, you want to go to a Power Five, you get more resources, you know, it's not going to be as close of a family like it is in HBCU, you know, you're going to be, you know, small fish in a big pond. So it's basically, you know, where do you want to lean towards? But at the end of the day, if you're talented, like, they'll find you anywhere. Mm-hmm. So that's not really an issue. You know, if you're looking like, oh, you know, do I want to go Power Five? And of course, you'll be on TV and stuff. And even now, HBCUs, they're starting to get aired more and everything like that. Shout out to Dion. I mean, they'll find you regardless. If you can play ball, you know, HBCU, you know, D1, D2, D3, they'll find you.
And has that been important to you in terms of, like you mentioned, HBCU having that family aspect to it? Has that been important to you, having that family aspect at Miles College?
It is important. You know, building relationships with people is always important. And I've been blessed and been around some good people, you know, at Miles, as a coaching staff, to, you know, even lunch ladies. You know, I mean, they were welcoming, they were nice, you know, and I'm appreciative of that.
All right, so as you're preparing for, you know, your next step, I just want to know how you know, your pops has influenced you. Military, I'm sure you're disciplined. I can see you got keto stuff in the background. So I know you up on time. I know you don't play. I know you keep everything clean.
Love it.
So how was growing up, you know, with that influence, how has that, you know, been a blessing for your journey and making your decisions for, you know, your next steps?
Man, I can't express enough, really, my whole family, you know, mm-hmm. my mom, dad, my sister, you know, they've all made sacrifices for me to be at this point. And I mean, they've all been pouring into me since I was a little boy, you know, the military, of course, you know, my dad is, you know, he's giving me structure and giving me order and everything like that. But, you know, now that I'm older, you know, it's like one of those instances where, you know, you're young, your dad's trying to get you to do these things and tell you these things, and you're like, you know, why, you know, or you know, stuff like that. And as you get older, you start to mature and you start to look at things. And, you know, I can see the things that my dad used to do at a younger age. And it's molded me into the person that I am today. And I can't thank him enough, you know, for the things that he done. Even my mom, you know what I mean? My mom and my sister, they molded me since a little boy to become this person I am today. So, I mean, I'm sure the military definitely helped because it changed my life. Military, I guess they changed people. You know, of mm-hmm. course, you got to be ordered and strict and stuff like that. But, yeah, like I said, I can't thank them enough for what they've done for me and the sacrifices they made and to build me up into the person I am today.
Ray, it sounds like Nigerian parents. We're like structured and strict.
Yeah, you fought saying. That structure. See, my man
I fought it.
Oh, look like he fought it. He looked like he rolled with it.
I mean, I know.
both y'all eating healthy these days, so it's some similarities. So that's what's up. But brother, I appreciate that insight on everything HBCUs and you recognizing that is sometimes certain situations will work differently for different people. But regardless, we've gotten similar answers whenever we ask that questions about how just HBCUs are growing, man. That's what really this is all about for us because we're graduates of HBCU. So the fact that you even gave that an opportunity and you were able to graduate, man, is just amazing.
It's dope. It's dope.
I appreciate it. And you know, I'm rooting for you, brother.
Definitely. I do have one last question before we let you go. You took part in the HBCU Combine. Like, how was that experience, man? That's like, to me, that's a dope experience. How was that experience?
It was great. You know, being a part of the first one, you know what I mean? That's in the history books. And like you said, HBCU, like it's growing, you know, I can already see it. You can already see, you know, subtle changes that wasn't there, you know, years ago. The experience was phenomenal. I mean, just to be out there and doing our thing, you know, in front of NFL scouts and everything, like that's a blessing in itself. Just to be a part of it, the first one representing HBCU schools, I mean, just all glory to God, really. I'm thankful to get out there.
All the time. Well, Kingston, man, we appreciate you being on, my man. Before we let you go, is there anything you would like to add?
What schools did you guys go to? I actually want to ask that.
Oh, okay, good. Okay, my man. Sweet. Okay.
Yeah, sweet. Question for us. That's
insane. Oh, we went to the University of Maryland Eastern Shore. We didn't have a football team, though. It was all basketball.
I don't know how well-traveled you are, though. But so have you been to Maryland or D.C. before? Because that's where we live closest to.
Yeah.
Nah, I've never been out that way. I want to make it a book around, get around more. But
okay.
Oh, see, that's what I'm saying. We got to bring you to a real HBCU homecoming. Not no disrespect to Miles, but.
Exactly. No disrespect to Miles. I know, right? I know.
We got like Howard. You know, we got our school.
Yeah.
We got Dale State, which is not far, which is Delaware State, which is not far from us. Of course, we got Lincoln. We got a lot of schools in this area. A&T. We got some schools like around this area.
Hampton.
Right below the Mason-Dixon, where Maryland is. It's so many schools. Virginia has a lot of schools. They got Virginia Union. So, yeah, we got to get you over this side. We might change your opinion on some things. We more than football here, bro.
Like, you know, the culture down south, too, now.
Yeah, I mean, there's some. Yeah, I've heard like, some.
Alabama State.
Yeah, I've heard about Alabama State.
They in college homecoming. I mean, you got FAMU.
You been to FAMU homecoming? I heard about FAMU.
I know, you know, they be jumping
I heard. No, I know. Believe me, I know. We know they jump. We know they jump. We're not HBCU love. We're not knocking no FAMU homecoming. We'll not do that here. But I'm just saying, like, you know, like what Ray's talking about. We have like Howard. Come on, like Howard is supposedly, you know, Diddy used to hold homecomings to Howard.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, see, and the TV, he used to shut down the whole street.
Taraji, Diddy, Black Panther, you know, before he passed, they all Howard alum. So, I mean,
well, Diddy's not really Diddy's like, not alum. I was about to say, because Diddy's not really an alum.
Hey, he made it without getting a degree, but
yeah, exactly.
Prioritized, like I said, I can see the discipline already. So,
yeah.
I know it's gonna be hard. We have to break you out of it just for a little while. That's fun of you coming this way. But, hey, I'm following you on Twitter now.
So. Me too, man. So me too.
Right, hit me up anytime.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
All right, man. You take it easy, man. You stay blessed.
Yes, sir. You too.
Again, that was former Miles College running back Kingston Davis. Man, he's still on his journey, man. So we rooting for him over here at the Urban Sports Scene. You can also find the video to this interview on our Urban Sports Scene YouTube channel. So go ahead to our Urban Sports Scene YouTube channel. You'll see the video with Ray, myself, and Kingston. Hey, subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, and Google Podcasts. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. Also, follow us on Twitter at Urban Sports Scene, IG at Urban Sports Scene, and like our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. Again, make sure you subscribe to our Urban Sports Scene YouTube channel as well. Check out the home of the Urban Sports Scene, Ampire Media at amppiremedia.com. And this show can be found on Podcast DC. Download the Podcast DC app to hear all of the Ampire shows as well as other great content. Hey, thank you all for tuning in. You've been listening to the Urban Sports Scene for ages. Yadig deuces. A mega. Lead us out, big homie.